What caused the financial crisis? The testimony continues this morning.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, welcome to The Morning Open. I'm Bill Radke. The Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission is doing its thing right now on Capitol Hill, looking into who and what caused the meltdown and how to prevent the next one, and we'll get a live report in a moment. But first, the stock market has just begun its Friday session, so where's Wall Street? Just kind of stuck there. The S&P 500 is up a tiny fraction. The NASDAQ is down a tiny fraction. And the Dow is ahead 11 points. It's at 10,938. Shares of Apple are up 0.5%. The company is stepping up its rivalry with Google by adding its own advertising system to its iPhones and iPads. The system is being called iAd. Stocks in Europe are up, and in Asia they're up as well today. Okay, let's say good morning to Chief Economist Chris Lowe at FTN Financial. He's with us live from New York. Hi, Chris.
Good morning.
So the big story in the economy this week was those March sales from the big retail chains, the Targets and Costcos and Penny's, et cetera. Why is that such a big deal?
Well, it's the magnitude of the rise. No one expected to see sales, which in the aggregate were up 9% from a year ago. And remember, March also was the strongest car sales, with the exception of the cash for clunkers month, since before the recession. So consumers really came out and spent in a big way.
Well, here's my concern, though, Chris. We froze our spending for so long. Isn't that some of that a matter of we have to finally replace the broken down car or the fridge? But isn't the consumer generally in debt and out of work still?
Well, a couple of things on that. One of them is that economists have argued for a while you don't get a strong V-shaped recovery without a nasty V-shaped recession. So we came down, spending came down so hard that even with this kind of growth, we're still not spending what we did in 07. But the other thing is that consumers clearly do feel better. It might be an early Easter and it might be warm weather that contributed to these numbers, but people don't spend like this unless they're confident that they can afford to spend like this.
Even though all that government debt is also hanging over us, you're going to stay optimistic.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And part of it is that this spending, which is contributing to economic growth, we had GDP growth of more than 6% last quarter, and it's going to be 4% or so this quarter. All of that's happening even though the government stimulus is beginning to fade.
Okay.
So we're addressing this deficit, and still the economy is growing.
Chris Lowe, FTN Financial, thank you.
You're welcome.
Now with us live, Marketplace's Amy Scott covering those crisis hearings on Capitol Hill. Hi, Amy.
That's right. Hello.
So we've heard from the former Fed chairman and Citigroup executives, and now who?
Now we're hearing from two former executives from Fannie Mae. That's the government-sponsored company that a lot of people blame for inflating the housing bubble by making money too easily available to people who maybe shouldn't have been buying homes. The former chief business officer, Robert Levin, is testifying, as well as former CEO Daniel Mudd, who's been criticized for ignoring warnings that the company was taking too much risk.
And what has that CEO had to say?
Well, in his opening remarks, Mudd did take some responsibility. He said Fannie and its cousin company, Freddie Mac, contributed to the crisis but didn't cause it. Here he is speaking just a little while ago.
I believe in retrospect that there was overinvestment in housing. I believe in retrospect origination standards slipped. There was too much intermediation. There were too many middlemen. Home ownership rates probably rose too high.
Note the words in retrospect. We're hearing that a lot this week, you know, people saying they couldn't have seen this coming. We've also been hearing some passing the buck. Mudd pointed out that it was Congress that required Fannie Mae to increase home ownership for low-income people and that mandate caused a lot of its problems. Later this morning, we'll also hear from two of the company's former regulators.
Marketplace's Amy Scott. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is the Morning Report for Friday, April 9th at marketplace.org. The British oil giant BP plans to invest in a controversial oil exploration project in Canada, and some of the company's biggest investors have begun to revolt. We get that story from Marketplace's Stephen Beard in London.
The California Public Employees Retirement System, America's largest pension fund, says it'll vote against the BP board at next week's annual meeting. CalPERS and other funds back a resolution critical of BP's oil sands project in Canada. Oil sands offer huge potential, but say the critics at massive environmental cost. Extracting the oil from lumps of sand and clay is messy. It scars the landscape, leaves toxic waste, and emits far more carbon dioxide than drilling for oil. Duncan Exley is with the ethical investment charity Fair Pensions. He says pension funds are rebelling mainly for financial reasons.
This is by no means limited to the environment. There have been a number of unanswered questions about what the costs of this project are and what the earnings of this project are.
But the Canadian oil sands could yield 173 billion barrels of crude, placing Canada second only to Saudi Arabia in oil reserves. BP says it cannot ignore such a major resource. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
This week, AT&T launched a rebranding campaign.
Rethink Possible.
Rethink Possible. The company has taken some hits for having a weak cellular network, and now it's trying to emphasize its strengths, as reporter Jill Barchet tells us.
AT&T wants to sell you much more than phone service.
AT&T has a good portfolio of products that's expanding that nobody has an idea that they sell.
Christopher Larson tracks AT&T at the securities firm Piper Jaffray. Larson says AT&T's problem is that people are getting rid of landlines, and it could lose its exclusive right to sell the iPhone as soon as July. He says AT&T needs to get beyond the phone line, but he's not convinced this glitzy ad campaign will work.
Explore. Try. Do. Because before it could be done, it couldn't.
Larson says there's a big risk that no one is going to understand what AT&T is talking about. In New York, I'm Jill Barchet for Marketplace.
After 70 years in Los Angeles, defense contractor Northrop Grumman would like to move its headquarters closer to its biggest customer, the federal government. But where exactly to move? Well, Maryland, Virginia, D.C., they're all making a pitch, as Marketplace's John Dimsdale reports.
No one's confirming anything, but each local government is said to be dangling a package worth $20 to $30 million to win Northrop. That includes property tax breaks and even paying moving expenses. The three districts covet the money Northrop's 250 well-paid executives will bring, the houses they'll buy, and the sales taxes they'll pay.
The cachet of a major corporate headquarters is a huge win.
Matt Erskine is with the Greater Washington Initiative.
It creates a multiplier effect in terms of this region's attractiveness to other businesses.
But with governments trying to cope with serious budget shortfalls, some locals wonder whether paying companies millions to relocate is worth it. Charlie Cray with the Center for Corporate Policy says it's become a corporate welfare arms race.
For a company that profited off of taxpayers to the tune of $1.7 billion last year alone, do we really want to subsidize them out of the budgets of communities that are suffering? Health cutbacks, education cutbacks.
Big corporate relocations are rare. 9 years ago, Chicago won Boeing's headquarters with a $61 million bid. I asked University of Chicago economics professor Alan Sanderson whether getting the company to move from Seattle was worth it.
Not really. Could we have spent the $61 million on something else that would have had a higher payoff for the city, even if it's hiring more police or improving the schools or planting trees or whatever? I think the analysis would suggest that it wasn't a particularly good investment.
But governments are starting to demand that companies deliver something in return, says Matt Erskine, things like new jobs or buildings.
So that if the performance measures aren't met by the company, there are clawback provisions to be able to take back the incentive money if the agreement isn't fulfilled.
The winning bid should be announced soon. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace. We'll be right back.
This summer, South Africa hosts the Soccer World Cup. And to provide stable electricity to that troubled power grid, the World Bank has approved a huge loan to help build a huge coal power plant. And that move has its critics. Brett Neely has the story.
South Africa couldn't get a commercial loan to build the power plant because of the financial crisis, so it turned to the World Bank for help. That angered some governments, including the U.S., who want to use World Bank money to fund clean energy projects. And this plant is definitely not clean, says energy expert Michael Levy at the Council on Foreign Relations.
It has emissions greater than some small countries.
The World Bank did attach some strings to the loan. It will also finance wind and solar power projects in South Africa. That seems like a case of one hand not knowing what the other is doing, says Andrew Light. He studies environmental policy at George Mason University.
I frankly find this, though, kind of schizophrenic. I mean, is it the case that we're always going to be saying that for every kilowatt hour of electricity generated through solar power, it has to be matched with a kilowatt hour of electricity generated through coal?
The World Bank may not have to worry about a repeat of this fight. Officials there told me they expect this coal plant will be the last one the bank finances. In Washington, I'm Brett Neely for Marketplace.
And finally, the entire week's business news in a Marketplace Minute. Don't get excited, it isn't decided. Just beware that U.S. Air has been invited by United to prepare to share their fares. Now, that might be unrequited, or it might ignite a fight if their competitors despair and have the pair declared unfair. Obama backs a banking tax, while Citigroup and Goldman Sachs and Alan Greenspan, Charles Prince and Robert Rubin are all convinced they're not the ones we should condemn. Mistakes were made, but not by them. Geithner went to Beijing. This spring, he's been bringing up the currency thing. It doesn't have to leap. Just let it creep. Don't keep it so bleeping cheap. Jobless benefits expire. Mortgage rates are getting higher. Toyota was fined. The birth rate declined. And Apple released a pad of some kind. Come see us by pad or phone or PC by typing in marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.